Money talks, and it doesn't just talk, it talks and talks and talks and talks, which means money has unbelievable clout in our culture. It has power, it influences our choices, our behavioral patterns, and our personal lives and our professional lives. And we've been talking about it in this series. This is the third and final week. And if you're a guest, you need to know that though money talks and has power and really does impact our lives, most of us, as you probably know, don't like to talk about money so much. Well, we like to talk about making more of it and maybe winning more of it, but we don't like to talk about our personal use of it. I mean, you won't find many people standing on a platform and talking about money, expecting people to come, because most people won't. But yet Jesus talked more about money than anything else because he knew it had the power to do positive things in our lives or destructive things. He knew that money was the number one thing that separates us from trusting God, because money's the number one false replacement God. And he doesn't want us to experience the fake thing. He wants us to experience the real thing, fulfillment, promise. And so he talked about it. And we're a church of Jesus Christ. And if we're going to follow him really, then we have to follow him in this as well. The first weekend, we looked at the dark side of money, how money has the power to control and destroy people, and what Jesus told us that could counteract that. The second weekend, we looked at the hardest part, which is the idea that we have to master money or it will master us. And many people don't understand this because so many churches are afraid to talk about what Jesus talked about. That Jesus gave us principles that can set us free, truth that can set us free to master money instead of being mastered by it. We don't have to be imprisoned by it. This weekend, we're going to jump to the last truth, but it's an amazingly important truth in the teaching of Jesus. We invest our money in what we truly value. I mean, we all talk about what we value. Talking about values is really easy, but where we really see what we value in life isn't through what we say, but it's through how we live and what we do. We literally invest our money in what we truly value. Jesus said it in talking about money in Matthew 6:21. He says, hey, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You want to know what you love? Look where you invest your treasure. That's what Jesus said. And just so you know, this talk isn't a talk meant to be one direction. It's not me telling you what you're doing wrong. This is a human conversation because I wrestle with these issues as a human being, and so do you. And Jesus addressed them, and we have to work them into our lives to experience the truth setting us free. What I really invest my money in is what I really value, no matter what I say on this platform or sing when I'm sitting in seats with you here. And the same is true with you. So what we have to do in a conversation like this is not think about each other, but think about ourselves. And this conversation is a conversation I've had to have between me and God, and I'm wrestling with myself, and I'm sharing these truths so that you can look within. Don't look down the row. Look within. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Here's the reality. The way we invest what we have in life is the clearest and most authentic evidence of what we really love most. Some people love themselves the most, and so first and foremost, they invest in themselves. Others love their homes or their businesses or their families or their hobbies, and so that's where they really invest the mother load of their finances. The simple truth is that our greatest sacrifices are given to that which we value and love the most. So I've had to be wrestling personally with this. What are my greatest values really? What am I investing in most? And you have to do the same thing. Now, I could give you all kinds of negative examples, but I'd rather do something positive. And so I want to give you a positive example from the Bible of this truth, that there were people who invested in Jesus to a supreme level because they loved him at a supreme level, and they were the Macedonian believers. Macedonia is a region of the world back in that day, and there were a group of people who came to follow Jesus. They became believers, and it totally transformed their lives. They just didn't sing different songs and attend different religious services. I mean, it totally transformed their world. It didn't just change their language and demeanor. It transformed their lives from the inside out. And I don't have to really say much about it. I'll just let the Bible do the talking. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. And now, brothers and sisters, we want you to know about the grace that God has given to the Macedonian churches. You see, out of the most severe trial, they're still overflowing with joy. Usually when we experience trials and persecution and suffering, we don't have joy, right? But yet because of God's grace, because they knew God's goodness and that he'd never let them down, even though they were suffering immensely in the world, they still were overflowing with joy. And he says, and they had extreme poverty. I mean, extreme poverty usually leads to despair and feeling like victims, but their extreme poverty welled up in the opposite, in rich generosity. Though poor, they were generous. Why? Because they had experienced the profound grace of God in their life. They loved what he had done in their lives so much that it transformed their world. They became generous. Paul says, for I testify that they gave as much as they were able. I mean, then he says, no, not really. They went beyond their ability. And then he goes, entirely on their own, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in the service of the saints. They were collecting a generous and sacrificial offering to help meet the needs of other people. They were investing in God's church, and God's church was going to wake the world up to Jesus and show us love, but it needed resources. And they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing. Now, that means one of two things. Either Paul, because he knew how poor they were, didn't even ask, and so they had to come and say, hey, why didn't you ask us? We want to be part of this. We want to give. We want to sacrifice. We're generous, you know. We want to respond. Or he asked them, and they delivered this unbelievable gift, and he said, no, you can't give that much. And so they had to plead with him to actually take it. And can you imagine? I have to tell you, I've been a pastor about 40 years. No one has ever come and pleaded with me to take more. Usually when I show up, they think I'm going to ask for more and they run. And why they think I'm going to ask for more, I don't do that. You know, it's like if I knock on your door, it's because there was an accident I had outside your home and I just happened to be there. I'm not coming and knocking on doors. But they were urgently pleading to be a part of this sacrificial giving. And it says, and this is crazy, they didn't do as we would normally expect people to do, you know. Usually you can figure out how people are going to work it. But they didn't do as we expected, it says in verse 5. But they gave themselves, first to the Lord, they gave themselves entirely to Jesus. They were all in to Jesus. And then they gave themselves to us. They gave financially in keeping with God's will. And here's what I want you to see. These wonderful people were no different from you and me. In fact, they were exactly the same, had the same fears and anxieties and needs and all that. They weren't like superhuman beings. The only exception probably in the comparison is that they were way poorer than us. They didn't live in a world with, you know, the safety nets. I mean, poor was poor. Life and death. And yet they gave so generously. Here's the difference, really. They invested in what they truly loved and valued, and what they truly loved and valued as supreme in their life was God, his people, and his church above everything else, and this is what they invested in. And there's an important point I think we get here. We don't give or not give because of how much money we do or don't have. We give or don't give according to what we love and value, because all of us are spending it on something, right? The question is, what do we love enough to spend it on? And so that's a pretty challenging point. But there's an application that can be really positive in our lives and change our lives, and it's simply this. As our love for God grows, I mean, if we're really growing in our love for God, if we're really growing in our faith in Jesus, we're really growing in our commitment to follow him and experience his promises, as our love for God grows, the level of our giving will grow. Because we invest our money in what we truly value. And this is the interesting dissonance that many of us have. We talk about loving God more and more and more and growing spiritually more and more and more, but our giving is unaffected. This was true of the Corinthians. He was saying, you're growing a lot of areas, but this area of giving you're failing in. You need to excel in this area. And it's true in many of our lives here in America. We're very much like the Corinthians. This is why Paul prayed for them to grow in their love. Look at Philippians 1:9. This is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, because the more we fall in love with God, the more we'll invest of ourselves in him, like the Macedonians did, and the more of his promise and fullness we'll experience. So with the rest of our conversation this weekend, I just thought it'd be great to talk about, okay, it's a heart issue, right? My heart expanding or contracting? Is it enlarging or diminishing? And how can I know? Well, we can give ourselves what I like to call a heart exam or a heart examination. So let's examine our hearts, okay? And that's what we're going to do. Because when we look into our heart, we find the reasons for giving. We find our motivations. Why are we really giving or not giving? And what does that tell us about the condition of our heart? Because it really does show us. All of us are at a certain level of generosity or lack of it, and it tells us something about the condition of our heart. And it's not the singing that tells, it's the giving that tells. 2 Corinthians 13:5 says, examine yourselves to see whether you're in the faith. Test yourselves. So we're going to give ourselves the test. Galatians 6:4, each one should test his own actions. Then he can take pride in himself without comparing himself to somebody else. And we're not supposed to be comparing ourselves to each other. There's no comparison. What I have and what you have is totally different. Where I'm at in the journey and where you're at in the journey is totally different. If I'm comparing myself to you, it's going to be a false comparison. I'll either feel worse about myself or better about myself, and none of it would be right. I'm supposed to compare myself to who I should be as I'm following Jesus. And the same is true with you. So as I'm giving this test, I'm not testing you. I'm giving you the principles through which Jesus said you can look into your heart and you can understand better why you are or aren't experiencing more of my promise. This isn't a test I take for you. It's a test I take for me. It's a test you can take for yourself. And now some of you are going to say, screw the test. I'm not going to take it. And you're going to keep standing outside of experiencing the fullness of God's promises in your life. Because if you always do what you've always done, you're going to keep getting what you've always got. And I'm telling you, if you're longing for something more, then it's a heart issue. And this is a way that we can start stepping into more. So what I want to do in this weekend's conversation, I simply want to share with you 7 levels of giving and what each level reveals about the condition of our heart. And you can test yourself against that as I'm testing myself against it. And it starts with level 1. We don't give. I mean, that's level 1. Let's just be honest. Let's tell the truth. People who don't give. And I've never met the person who doesn't give that doesn't pretend that they do. Right? It's just the way it is. It's like you look at this and go, wow, Northridge Church, look at all these people, and they all look like they give. This place must be rich. No, it's not. And here's the reason, and not being mean, I'm just being honest. The majority of people who come to Northridge don't give. That's the level they're at least not here. We don't give. I don't know about you, but that blows my mind. Of course, there are a multitude of reasons for being at this level, for not giving. One is, well, you don't genuinely know God. You know, you talk about him, sing about him, you come to a place that talks about him and sings about him, but you don't know him. And this makes sense, right? If you don't know him, why would you give to him? That makes sense, to give to a God you don't know. He's made promises about providing for our needs, and why would we give to a God that we don't know? Because if we don't know him, we can't trust his promises. And I just need to say this. More than anything in the world, I and we at Northridge long for you to genuinely know Jesus. Because in him you're going to find the fullness of what you're looking for. We believe that if you find him, you'll find everything that's missing in your life. It's our mission to wake you up to Jesus. And when you genuinely know him, you'll discover he's not a taker, but a giver. He's not out for what he can get from you, but what he can add to you. And once you've been transformed by his grace, giving is not an obligation, but a privilege. Isn't that what Macedonia said? Let us have the privilege of giving too. I don't know about you, but there are some times when I don't feel like it's a privilege to give. I feel like it's an obligation, and it's one that I want to live up to. And all that's telling me is that my heart's in the wrong place in that moment. How's your heart in this moment? Another reason believers don't give is because they've never known or applied God's principles for freedom in the area of finances. The truth sets you free, but you don't live according to his principles, and so you live in debt and under the agony of it, and you just can't escape from it. Well, you need to live according to his principles, and you'll find the freedom that comes with it, which is why this coming winter and spring, we're going to up in a big way, and we hope thousands of you take advantage of it, this thing called Financial Peace University. And you can go to the link that's on the screen and you can sign up even now. We're going to offer it multiple times during the week, because if you don't know God's principles for financial freedom, then you'll live in financial bondage. This is what we want for you. Freedom. It's what Jesus wanted for you. And the only other reason that I can think of for we don't give, and it applies to me sometimes, I haven't been in decades in a place where I don't give, but I've been in times during the last decades where I don't give near the level where I feel like I should be giving. And it's because my heart's got some problems. If you don't give, then you've got a heart problem. It comes from the heart. Jesus said it, your treasure's where your heart is. Many of us just don't love or value God enough in our lives to give to him. Do you? It's a clear sign that we're trying to find fulfillment in investing in temporary things instead of the eternal. The only hope we have is to let Jesus renew our heart. All right. Level two. This is fun, isn't it? We give for appearance sake. It's like, I don't want to be one of those people sitting there knowing I don't give and have everyone else thinking I don't give, so I'm going to give just a little bit and make it look like a lot. So people will think I give. Most people don't give in the baskets as they go by anymore. We don't give cash. We give online, and we give all kinds of different ways now, and that's cool. You text it and all that stuff, But man, when I used to give in a basket before I was a giver, when I just wanted people to think I was a giver, I used to roll up ones in a way that made it look like a bundle of stuff, you know? You know what I'm talking about. We give for appearance sake. This is where we give because we think people are watching. This is where we give in a way that makes people think we're better than what we are. May I tell you, your life isn't more fulfilling when people think you're better than you are. It's more fulfilling when Jesus is fully in you. There's a big difference between those two things. Don't give for appearance sake. It doesn't matter. Jesus knows your heart. You think he's up there giving you a gold star because you're giving so someone next to you thinks you're better than you are? No, Jesus warns us about this problem. Look at Matthew 6, verses 1 and 2. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you have no reward from your Father in heaven, no gold star, friends. So when you give to the needy, don't announce it with trumpets, dun-da-da-da, but as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets, to be honored by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. And can I just say this as an aside? Northridge is not the kind of place where we would ever want someone to do this. We want you to genuinely know Christ. You don't have to fake it. Many come here who don't genuinely know Christ, and we're so thankful that you're here. We want to share with you the reality of Christ in our lives and our story and what he said, in hopes that you'll find his reality in your life. But we don't want you faking you're something you're not. It's crazy. Don't give for appearance sake. Do you? Level three. We give as an expression of value received. Now we're starting, you see our heart starting to change. It's like, okay, they're giving me something, I'm going to give them something, you know? A lot of people, they come in and if I really suck one weekend, then they go, I'm not giving nothing, you know, screw that. But if they think, well, that talk was awesome, I think he actually studied before that talk, then it's like, I'm going to give a quarter or 50 cents maybe, you know, that they really dig deep. And they're giving as an expression of value received. And usually it's not for my talks. Usually it's the music. Why do you think we put the music before the offering and not the talk, right? But that is a whole, that's really not the reason. But it's pretty funny. Anyway, here's the thing. Many people give as an expression of the value they're receiving. It's like a payment for services. It kind of floats off of Romans 13. Give everyone what you owe them. If you owe taxes, pay taxes. If revenue, then revenue. Let no debt remain outstanding. And so you go, yeah, they gave me something, I'll give them something. They gave me something, I'll give them something. And I have to tell you, I understand this, and it's legit, but we want you to know this is important. Now hear me. There's absolutely no obligation to do this here. We don't pour ourselves out so you'll give. We pour ourselves out because Jesus poured himself out for us, and we want you to know the fullness that comes because of what Jesus gave to you. You owe us nothing. We consider it a privilege to be a part of your spiritual journey, whether you ever give a dime or not. What you give has nothing to do with the investment we make in you. Level four. We give as an expression of spiritual gratitude. Just flowing off of Thanksgiving week, this really makes sense, but it's really true. It's an issue of gratitude, generosity. There's certainly a positive and biblical reason to give, gratitude-wise, because gratitude really begins to open our hearts, and giving is an issue of the heart. Gratitude opens our hands. People who give at this level aren't giving out of obligation. It's not a have to, it's a want to. It's not about manipulation, it's about privilege. There are many people who give to God through Northridge for all that God has done in their lives through this ministry, and that's legit. Look at Psalm 116:12. How can I repay the Lord for all his goodness to me? I mean, it's this question we have, and it's, you know, someone who doesn't give is someone who might talk about having gratitude, but no real gratitude, because gratitude gives, right? But there are people who give because, oh man, how can I repay God? I want to do something, and finances is one of the ways. Are you that grateful? Level five. We give out of spiritual obedience. We give out of spiritual obedience. Now remember, we're going through the thing and we're getting to where our heart is enlarging more and more and more, and we're getting further into this thing, and so we're becoming more like the Macedonians and less like the Corinthians in our context, and we give out of spiritual obedience. At this level, people are stepping so far into following Jesus that they now realize that what comes naturally to them leads to the wrong place, and they're going to instead submit themselves to doing what Jesus commands them to do, even though that doesn't feel natural, because Jesus is right and we're wrong. Jesus is good and we're not naturally good. Jesus will never let us down, but we'll always let ourselves down. And so we're going to obey him, even though it doesn't feel right. It must be right because he said it. And so they become serious about disciplining themselves to obey. And this is what people of faith do. Your heart gets to a certain place. Look at Romans 1:5. It's the whole point. Paul says, we received grace and the call to give a message, apostleship, so that we could call people from among all the Gentiles, those who live for themselves and don't know God, to the, and get this phrase, the obedience that comes from faith. When we have genuine faith in Jesus, do you know what it leads to? Obedience. And yet so many people in this world claim to have faith in Jesus, but their life is nowhere aligned to Jesus. It's just not true. Look at Jesus said in John 14:15, if you love me, you will obey what I command. So many people, I'm a pastor, I'm telling you, so many, oh, I love Jesus with all my life, and they don't give. What? You're kidding yourself. I love Jesus. And they lie through their teeth all the time. No, if you love me, you'll keep my commands. Do you love him, really? His command regarding giving is seen all the way from the Old Testament into the New. Many people try and argue this, but to me, the minute you start trying to argue it, you've proven your heart issues. The biblical standard that he gives us, and this is really important for giving, his minimum command is called the tithe. If you never grew up in a religious environment, probably never heard of it. Tithe just means tenth. Tenth. Just sounds better. Tithe. Look at Malachi 3:10. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse. The storehouse is the place that God's building, the place where his people are gathering, the place where his mission is being fulfilled. And the Old Testament was in the temple and synagogues, and the New Testament's the church. The church is called the storehouse in Corinthians. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be food in my house. The tithe. This passage reveals that the tithe is the means through which God is determined to fund his church. That's how he does it. He could do it any way he wants. But he's decided through the generosity of those who, like the Macedonians, truly value him, and so they're going to invest of themselves. That's how the church will go forward. If the church is going to impact lives and make a difference, God's people are going to have to obey him and give the tithe. And if every believer was at this level of simple obedience, I love Jesus just enough to obey him, if every believer was there, this church could change the world. Because we're already doing a lot to impact the world, but listen, and I'm just being honest. The best we can figure it, and we're being extremely liberal, less than 5% of the people who come here tithe. Almost all the people who come here love Jesus with their, oh my gosh. But less than 5% tithe, and we're being graciously liberal. You must be living in Plymouth and making $30,000 a year or something like that. Do you know how sad this is? Because you're not hurting us, you're hurting yourself. Your heart is so closed off as you express this great big heart for God, and you're missing his promises, and then you're praying, God, I need you, I need you. And he's going, your heart is closed to me. I'm knocking, but you won't open it. We won't even obey him. Imagine the impact if we just simply obeyed. Wow. Some of you are going, please go to the next level. Level 6, we give above the tithe. What? Go back to the last one. We give above the tithe as an expression of grace. Above the tithe as an expression of grace. You know what grace does? Grace never just lives the fence of right and wrong. Grace always leaps beyond it. It always goes further. 2 Corinthians 8, the Macedonians didn't give as they were expected to give. They gave way beyond. They blew Paul's mind away because grace always goes beyond. Does your giving go way beyond? This is where I really start getting challenged. And Roxanne and I give way beyond the tithe. I have for a long time. And it's not because we make a lot. Most people think we make way more than we make. I'm not a TV evangelist, dudes. You know, I don't have a Learjet, book deals, and television shows and all that stuff. I'm a local church pastor, been here 28 years. Let me just tell you something. We give way beyond the tithe. But I don't know that we give enough beyond the tithe. Where's my love at for Jesus? See, I'm challenged by this all the time. Look into your own life. And then in level 7, we give sacrificially out of love for God's work. This is where the Macedonians were. Their heart was so in love with Jesus that they gave sacrificially out of love for God and his work. And this really takes two angles.
I'll leave reading the passage that I've given you to you, but the first angle is, boy, man, we give sacrificially out of love for God's work in our lives, you know? Love for the Lord's work in our own lives. You've so changed me, Jesus, that I can't help but want to give more and more of myself to you and what I have to you. You can read the passage in Luke 7 where a woman was so transformed that she was willing to give everything to him. But there was a Pharisee judging her, and he wasn't willing to give anything. And it was because his heart was small and her heart was big. Where's your heart? And there's another angle of this where we love the Lord's work in others' lives. This is really unselfish. Where it's like, man, I just want to be a part of it. Many people give at Northridge, not just because of what God's done for them, but because they want to be a part of changing the world. That's what I was talking about with Set My Heart Christmas offering. We just want to change the world in the name of Jesus because he changed us and he's changing people's lives. Do you care at all about what God can do in other people's lives? I mean, if all we did was obey and tithe, we could change the world. Imagine if we were grace givers. In Acts 4, you find people who loved what God was doing in the lives of others so much that they sold houses and gave the profits of their houses so that they could invest against life change for others. That's crazy. And here's the big question. What level are you at? The question. And remember, I'm not asking the question about you. I'm asking the question about me. You need to ask the question about you. What level are you at, really? I mean, does your giving match your talk about love for Jesus and valuing Jesus and trusting Jesus and worshiping Jesus or not? At least be honest with yourself. What's the condition of your heart these days? In a moment, we're going to give you time to spend with God as we lead you in worship. But all of us have a next step. I have a step I have to take. You have a step that you have to take. All of us do. We're never supposed to be static in following Jesus. Jesus doesn't stand still. And I just constructed a couple of ideas about what maybe your next step should be. And I thought I'd give them to you so you could contemplate them as we take time this morning. The first action step, receive the Lord's love in your life. I mean, if you don't know Jesus, of course you wouldn't give. And you're going to go, yeah, why don't I? Oh, I don't even know him. What? Step into his love. He can change your life. All you have to do is receive him. He's knocking at the door of your heart. If you open your heart to him, he can transform you. He can fill you from the inside out. Step into his love. Maybe your action step is commit to growing in your love for the Lord. It's like, yeah, you've already received his love for you, but you haven't been growing in your love for him. It's like, it's all about you. And that's what happens when we don't give or we give very little. It's about us. The more we fall in love with him, the more our lives are invested in him. Start falling in love with him. Maybe your next step is, and this is an ongoing step for me, to continually evaluate and adjust your giving according to your heart. Should never be a static thing. I mean, look, all you have to do is evaluate your giving. Even if you're a sacrificial giver, like Roxanne and I have tried to be over the last several decades, you still have to go, why have we stayed here? What should we be navigating through? Are we doing right and evaluating ourselves? And I encourage you to do it because it's a life-changing experience, because your heart is the only thing that can block you from experiencing the fullness of God. And your level of giving is a clear sign of the condition of your heart. From my view, the condition of our heart is the big issue. The big issue. That's why David, when he blew it, recognized it was a heart issue. And when he prayed, he said, God, give me a new heart. And as our team comes out, I want to encourage you, as they talk about set my heart, focus on the condition of your heart. It's a heart issue. And then out of the heart flows the abundance of everything else God's taking. And here's what I want to encourage you to do. This is an invitation time. It's not an invitation for you to move forward in the church. It's an invitation time for you to open your heart to let Him move in your heart. And if that happens, everything will change for you. And you'll know the joy of His promise. Dear Jesus, set my heart.
Of doubt again, echo within me every promise that your word be louder than my fears. Speak to the void when I can't see, lift up my head in every valley, let your joy be greater.
And when that happens, our lives absolutely change forever. Have you set your heart on Him? What I'd like to do is pray with you. Would you bow with me just for a moment? And as we pray, if you're here and you're saying, man, I need to set my heart on Him. I need to open my heart to Him. I hear Him knocking. Would you pray with me? Take my words and make Him the expression of your heart to Him. Just in your heart, say, Jesus, I'm changing my heart's focus to You. I've believed in the wrong things. I've trusted in the wrong things. I've done the wrong things. But You died on the cross to forgive me of my sin and rose again to give me new life. And so I'm opening my heart to You and asking You to change it. In Jesus' name, amen. If you just prayed with me, we'd love to help you take next steps. Two ways. You can text us at 313131. We'd love to know you prayed with us. All you have to do is text the message Northridge. We'll send you information about next steps you can take. Also want to encourage you that we have a prayer team that meets down here after services. And after a talk like this, you might want to just spend some time talking with someone or praying with someone. Please come and take advantage of the prayer team in all of our different environments. And I want to close with the last thing on your outline. I want you to remember this, okay? Becoming a giver really is the secret to genuine happiness. I didn't say it. Jesus did. I mean, in Acts 20, 35, He says, blessed are those who give rather than receiving. And the reason He was able to say that was because happiness is an expression of a heart that's healthy. And the heart that gives is a heart that's healthy. Let's go away happy in the name of Jesus. Next week, we start a Christmas series. It's not on money. Call all of your friends. You can come back. He's not talking about money anymore. It's on Christmas. We'll see you then. Thanks, everybody.